This is Will's Band of the Week for July 19th, 2020. Hello, and welcome to another edition of Will's Band of the Week. This is Will, along with Chris from Ron Swanson Studios in Madison, Wisconsin.
I'm here.
And Nicholas from Backyard Studios in Melbourne, Australia.
Hey, that's a good title for my studio, Backyard Studio. I'm here, and happy, and hopefully I'm awake.
I think our studios each need to have a name. I mean, Fourth Bedroom Studios
totally.
Has had a name for a long time, but...
And that's a good one.
Yeah. Yeah, it's legendary, right? World famous.
Second only to Abbey Road.
Right. Abbey Road and Fourth Bedroom. That's what they say.
Yeah, pretty much.
Oh, man. So, how are things down in Melbourne? It's very hot here. 90, about 90 Fahrenheit here.
Well, I guess we're always the opposite, really, aren't we? It's more 7 a.m. on a Sunday morning. It's cold. We're kind of coming into winter now. Well, we're in winter. Yeah, it's cold. It's about, I don't know what the temperature is. I'm only going to know what it is in centigrade, Celsius. I don't even know what I'm talking about. I'm looking it up as we speak. Okay, it's 11 degrees Celsius in Melbourne right now.
So I'm going to say maybe that's about, 45 Fahrenheit or something? Just throwing it out there.
11, yeah, you kind of, you need your jacket on when you go out. It's 51.8 degrees Fahrenheit, so almost 52.
Okay. So, and that's cold to you, huh? That's, you've got a temperate climate. I mean, we've got...
I guess
you
so,
know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, we don't have snow in Melbourne. You do have it if you drive a few hours up into the mountains, but we don't, basically never snows here. We like to talk about and complain about the weather a lot in Melbourne. I was just going to mention there was a Bon Jovi song back in about 1989, an album track from their New Jersey album called 99 in the Shade. And so that's always my reference. Like they're talking about like 99 degrees Fahrenheit. So that's that's why I'm trying to like, all right, okay, so 99 degrees in the shade, that must be kind of hot. So like maybe that's about 35 degrees Celsius. Anyway, it's just another point of like why Bon Jovi is everything and everything is Bon Jovi.
Yeah, see, I don't know a whole lot about Australia, but I was unaware that they used the standard Bon Jovi scale for meteorology there.
Right?
So that's just a game. You know, you learn something new every day.
Well, here's another thing. You know, it's very, very common for people to cite the average human temperature, which is 98.6 Fahrenheit, right? So what is that in Celsius, Nicholas? Like the normal temperature?
Oh, it's like 37 degrees for your body temperature.
So if you have a really bad fever, you've got a 40.
Yeah.
And hot-blooded, check it and see.
Yeah. Right. See, it all comes down to you can use music references to figure out these things, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Born a classic.
Yeah, pretty cool. All right. Well, here is what I think the next feature we need to cover is.
It's time for the very serious Corona Report. My Corona.
So there were some corona-related things that happened, you know, music-wise. I consider it a coronavirus-related thing when the Beths can play a show in front of a huge crowd in New Zealand.
Oh, right.
Right?
Wow.
Chris, did you watch it?
Jumping right to it.
I think, was it David or you, Chris, who sent us that? It was a photo. I don't know. Was there actually, there was a clip too, right?
Yes. YouTube video clip.
Like, and we're talking like recent.
I think so.
Post-corona. Because New Zealand has, I don't know if they've eliminated it entirely, but they've squelched basically. It. They've squashed it down to so small. Wow. So, the United States is doing, as a whole, really, really badly. And I read a couple of weeks ago that Melbourne was kind of not doing very well either. How's it going now?
Yeah. Oh, it's bad. It's getting bad. We were doing really well, like, up until about a month ago. And so we'd all been on lockdown for a couple of months. This is going back to kind of like April and May. And then we all kind of came out of lockdown and kids went back to school and, you know, restaurants and things like that kind of opened up, sort of still with restrictions, and libraries opened up, and then all our numbers just went to rubbish. And now we're back on lockdown, so we've gone back to homeschooling and stuff like that. So we're actually not doing so well in Melbourne corona wise and we're all a bit depressed because we've gone, after like getting through a couple of months of pretty restricted lockdown and getting through that, it was like, oh great, yeah, that worked. And then it didn't really work in the end. So we're back on everyone just in their houses, unless you're going to work or going to go to the supermarket and that sort of thing, basically. And exercise. You can walk your dog.
Yeah, that's good. Just think if the dogs had to stay inside too. That'd be really bad. Dog lockdown would make it even worse.
So, yeah, I'm looking at this clip of the Beths. Yes, it was from just about a week ago. And it looks like, there's literally hundreds of people there, all pushed up against each other. Definitely no social distancing in the mosh pit.
Yeah, well, hope they can keep it at a low to zero level. And then I was saying that means everybody should just move to New Zealand for indie rock stardom now, right?
Maybe they're going to be the only ones who survive. Who knows? There's going to be a boom in New Zealand indie rock. It's going to be the new Melbourne.
We'll just move. We can just move everything to New Zealand. Like all the sports teams can move to New Zealand. Oh man. And there was also a Guided by Voices live show, which I did not watch. I think, they were a little aggressive in their pricing. It was $25 to watch it. But they did it in a club, and I don't remember what club it was, but, a real stage and a full band. And I read that the sound quality was great. So they did the most top-notch thing they could do. So
you have to pay to watch the live stream.
Yeah.
Pay $25.
You had to pay $25, and then you could watch it live, and then you get, it stays up for 96 hours. So you got, watch it for 4 more days or whatever.
Right.
So, maybe I would have done it for 10, but also the problem, I wouldn't have been able to watch it live. It was really at an odd time, like 5 p.m. or something. So, anyway, people are being creative. Figuring out ways to do things differently.
As part of my lockdown, I spent the week listening to a podcast about the movie Almost Famous, which is, of course, a classic Cameron Crowe movie about his life, where he went on tour with Led Zeppelin at age 15 and reported on them for Rolling Stone, and he turned it into a fictionalized version in the year 2000. And, the music in that is great. Obviously. I was listening to the podcast, and it's a movie about a rock band, and the guy that plays the lead guitarist for the band, the actor didn't play the guitar. And so he goes into this long thing on the podcast about how long it took him, like he learned to play the guitar just for the movie. And this is just like crazy to me that actors get like so into character that he literally learned the entire how to play guitar just to be in this movie. And then I went and I watched the movie, And he's literally on screen. I think I counted 3 seconds where his fingers are actually on the fret. Otherwise, it's like it's his back, and you know he throws his head back, and he's, you know, he's vamping like a rock star. But that's just insane. Like, I think that's probably just a story he's telling. I doubt he learned how to play like a 70s rock god.
Yeah,
just for this movie. yeah, but I guess, you know, some guys, they just want to get. They get so deep into it. They want to get so into character that that's what they do. But
right.
Listen to the Origins podcast about Almost Famous, and then watch the movie if you're a music fan, especially like 70s classic rock, which has gotten me. I'm listening to the Deep Purple catalog now and enjoying it quite a bit.
They had a song that I loved when I was about 10 called "Woman from Tokyo." Did you get to that one?
I don't know. I don't really know the names a whole lot, but the albums Burn, Deep Purple in Rock, and Machine Head are the three best so far. So make sure you check out Deep Purple.
Love it. Wow. I love that you're listening to Deep Purple. I'm pretty sure that David Coverdale of one of Chris's favorite bands, Whitesnake, was the lead singer maybe on that Burn album.
Boy.
Was he?
Wouldn't he be... Wouldn't he be not old enough to be like an original Deep Purple guy?
No, he's way old. No, no, he wasn't an original member, no, but he was on their...
Okay.
He was like in later. He was on like 2 or 3 of their albums.
Hmm.
Yeah, let's see. Most famous, perhaps, for Smoke on the Water.
Yes.
But yeah, their song Burn, the first song on the album Burn, is amazing. And yeah, they're a UK band, so... If you like the classic rock, they're definitely a place to start.
Yeah, it was David Coverdale on vocals on the album Burn.
There you go.
Wow. Nicholas comes up, he whips out the music journalism from his head. That's just really amazing.
I just like being able to, we've already mentioned Bon Jovi and Whitesnake now. We're only a few minutes into the podcast.
Yep.
Yeah, is this the Rock and Apple update, or is this, are we talking about coronavirus?
So I slowly watched, and this is not this is media related, but not music related. But I finally finished the Michael Jordan documentary just this morning, the 10-part thing with Chris. I think you watched it when it came out like a couple months ago. So it was definitely entertaining, the classic documentary style. You know, just interviews, old highlights, and stuff. And it was one fun thing about it for me was that. I didn't remember the results of any of the games, you know, so there was a little bit of suspense. Of course, I knew they were going to win, you know, at the end, because Michael Jordan wouldn't let a documentary exist that didn't have him winning at the end, right? But, yeah, pretty entertaining.
Yeah, it seems, I mean, the criticism of it is that it was basically bankrolled by Michael Jordan,
like
he executive produced it or whatever. So the whole thing is essentially him thinking back 20 years, and just dunking on his old opponents, like saying how worthless they all are, and you know, settling all old scores and stuff like that. Which, if you have the money to do it, I mean, that's fine with me. It's pretty exciting. But someone, I saw someone tweets, someone should tell Michael Jordan that. He lost to the COVID in 1998 or something. He'd come out and just eviscerate it.
That's be right. COVID. his revenge motivation was pretty funny. There were some the old stars from those days. I kind of had forgotten about, like John Stockton and Karl Malone and Reggie Miller. You know, these guys that were really, really good NBA players, but obviously not at the Jordan level. Nobody
and of course
was,
Jordan's teammate, famous Australian Luke Longley.
Yes, that's right.
He might even be from Melbourne.
It could be.
You guys keep talking, I'll look that up. Luke Longley. He is from Melbourne, yes, 51 years old.
I wonder if he's ever been to a Nicholas backyard barbecue, talking, reminiscing about the old basketball days, the glory days.
Yes, we need a follow-up documentary where it's just Luke Longley talking trash about Michael Jordan from Nicholas's backyard.
Yeah.
I always wonder what those guys are doing now, people that have had, you know, sporting careers that ended 30 years ago.
Yeah, it's got to be weird when it just your life is built on this competitive fire and then it just ends. So, well, Jordan was always known for gambling, so he probably just went and played blackjack for $1 million or something. I don't know. But go ahead.
Probably made like $30 to $40 million in his life.
That's not bad.
At that point, I'm just like, I'm buying an island or something, and I'm just going to get away from everybody forever and just listen to Deep Purple.
You could do that.
and Bon Jovi.
Yeah. All right. That's the sports update. I didn't play the sports jingle, but anything else feature, side track related, or should we get into our music, which is so fun this week again? Three things are very different from different angles and different styles and different eras, and it's just exciting, right?
Very much so.
Yeah, I reckon we just get into the music.
The Beths, we mentioned them, and they have a new album, and they're pretty well liked generally by the podcast crew. And I think Chris, didn't you had them as your number one album of, was it last year or the year before?
2018. They were number one.
So really, by all rights, you should be introducing this album.
Yes, the much anticipated album. And of course, it was much anticipated when they played the festival that shall not be named last year,
right,
where they were and where I saw them three separate times. The most emotional, of course, was the last one, which came the day after the Christchurch shootings in New Zealand, where they had to stop a couple songs because Elizabeth Stokes, the lead singer, the Beth of the Beths, began crying and couldn't go on with the songs, which is a little bit of a bummer. But, obviously you understand their feelings. But it was, it was great just because it was, it was a real human emotional moment. Obviously, the shooting itself isn't great, but, just kind of seeing how they reacted was really interesting. But, so their album was upbeat, power pop, kind of what we like, what much of us like on the podcast. And so I had high hopes for this one, and I think it actually succeeds. It's a little bit different. It's got a couple ballads strewn in there that you wouldn't expect or you didn't hear on the first album. So they're expanding a little bit. And I've seen some critics say that that's not a welcome change. I think it very much is. And so I will pick a song. And I'll pick song number 8, which is Mars, the God of War.
Mars, the god of war, pretending sorcery.
Beth's the yep. second album. It's called Jump Rope Gazers.
And that would be a song that would fit in nicely with on the first album. So,
yep.
What are you Definitely. Guys going to have to pick one of the slower ones?
Well,
so I don't look foolish.
I think, well, I told you guys, I think the title track is like the ballad of the year so far. But I kind of want to play a different one. So I'm going to mix it up a little bit. So, yeah, I agree generally with your assessment, Chris. I think it's a really good album, and the variation. They can't just do like a straight power pop thing for every song. And part of what made them great on their last album is that a lot of the songs, about halfway through, it sounds like a pure power pop song, and then it does a little twist, sometimes a little more sensitive, kind of a bridge, and it's all really, really effective. So, well, I ruminated on this because I really like a lot of it enough that it's hard to pick a track, but I settled on number 10. I love this one. The last track, Just Ooh. Shy of Sure. I love the chords, the chord changes, the backing vocals. That song is just great. So pretty cool when you can do that with the last track. It's not sometimes the last track is sort of a, I don't know, sounds like it's an add-on or something, but this one just, it fits in perfectly. So Nicholas, you're kind of, you're not quite neighbors, but just a short swim, you know, and you'd be there, right?
It's true, yeah. They're not far away. I'm sort of laughing because I feel a bit awkward because I feel like we're at a party and like everyone's talking about this other person who's not at the party, and everyone else really likes this other person, and everyone's saying, oh, they're really friendly, and then someone else is saying, oh, yeah, they're really funny, and then someone else is saying, oh, yeah, they're really cool, and I'm just kind of like standing there not really saying anything because I don't really like that person so much.
No!
Oh, it has to happen sometimes.
I don't want to lie to you guys. I don't dislike this. I've never really paid attention to the Beths, so I really have to, you know. I was trying to get the, you know, what they're all about sort of stuffed into my brain in a short amount of time. So I guess I listened to the album lots of times, but also watched a few clips and listened to their previous album because I was like, oh, right, okay, so who are the Beths again? I didn't even, before I first looked them up, I didn't even know that they were from New Zealand. So I feel like I was kind of starting from zero. And, yeah, I guess I would say their album is fine, full stop.
This is all New Zealand-Australia rivalry, isn't it?
Yeah, it's got to be.
I think that's got to be it.
It's not. No, it's not really. I guess they've got a bit more of a. This is kind of almost a dirty word on this podcast. They've got more of a commercial sound than I was expecting. And I guess when I first listened to it, I was like, wow. So what makes this really that different than some of the kind of pop rock songs that are on like an earlier Taylor Swift album?
Oh. Wow. Well, the songs are just so much better. That's my answer.
Yeah, but I guess it's got a sort of a vibe to it that I'm like, oh, okay, yeah, it just wasn't my flavor. You know, it didn't have enough of something for me in it. It didn't have enough wrong with it. There's nothing wrong with it, and that's what's wrong with it.
Wow. That might be the new it's challenging but not confrontational.
Right.
But, you know, I certainly listened to it lots of times and, you know, kind of liked it. And there was a totally awesome guitar. My favorite moment is actually the guitar solo on the title track. So I don't know if you feel like it would ruin a choice to start it halfway through this so that we can hear the guitar solo. Otherwise, you guys can choose another song or whatever.
Fine with me.
Okay, cool. So in the title track, Jump Rope Gazes, the guitar solo comes in just after 3 minutes 40, and it's kind of unexpected, and it almost sounds like the guitar player kind of starts playing and then he sort of falls down the stairs as he's playing, and it's really cool.
Why don't we start it at about like... 2.5 then, like halfway through.
Sure.
Yeah, there it is. I like the whole thing, including the guitar solo.
Sure. It's slick. It's the I guess the background vocals, don't you think? Like in the indie pop that we listen to and like, there's rarely kind of like harmony background vocals that sound anything like that. And it gives it a sheen, don't you think? Like it's going to sound really good on the radio, and I guess that's kind of maybe that's part of what I'm kind of reacting against. Well, do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, sure.
Too commercial.
They really do it live too, though, right, Chris? Now I only saw like the 1 half-hour show when we saw them last year, but I think they were doing pretty good backing vocals too.
Yep, they do live. A lot of harmonizing.
Yeah.
And that's another good example of kind of the slower jams on this one. I was actually, have you ever, do you ever get in the shower and you, like a song pops into your head and you can't think of where you heard it? Like, God, what is that song? Who sings it? And I was in the shower and I was thinking of the song You Are a Beam of Light, which is number 9 and a slow jam. And I'm like, that can't be the Beths. And so I was thinking, like, is it Laura Marling? Is it because it's so slow and like reflective? And then I got out and looked it up, and it was the Beths. It was on this album. So yeah, they're stretching it out.
Okay, I have one more thing on this to try with this album, and I think Nicholas gave us that assignment that one time to watch a Whitesnake video at the same time we watched something else. Okay, so
yes.
I'm going to play part of a song. I'm going to play a snippet here, but I want you to imagine, instead of Elizabeth Stokes singing, that it's Don Barnes from 38 Special singing, okay? So you just need to substitute that voice and then listen to this. What do you think?
I feel like on this podcast, every band is just like 38 Special until proven otherwise. Like, that's the default. And the band has to prove to us that they are not 38 Special.
Right.
I'm not sure if I got there in my mind with that one.
I think they have some 38 Special guitar licks in there. Mm-hmm. Some of that style. So anyway, maybe that doesn't strike everybody that way. Okay, did we do it justice? Oh, Chris and I did it justice, at least.
Hopefully. I'm not giving it the thumbs down, and I am a closet Taylor Swift fan as well, so that wasn't a put down, my earlier reference.
They would take her bank account.
Yeah, they would, for sure.
Nicholas isn't even an American, and I want to deport him.
Fair enough. Hey, I'm just going to say what I really think, so, take it or leave it.
No, it's appreciated.
You bet. All right, now to hear what Nicholas really thinks, we have to go back to 1975, right? So, before we do that, I will come up with a shorter version of this, but for now, this is what we've got. It's got to be in here somewhere.
Oh my God, I can't believe I still got this.
Wow, when this came out, I was still in diapers, and David was already getting laid.
Yeah, we dug deep into the vault.
Was that one of the songs we're reviewing?
We really have two vault selections, but let's go to Nicholas's, because his first, because it's deeper into the vault. It's way down there.
Sure.
Yeah.
We're going back to 1975, the year of my birth, as chance would have it. So I'm 45 now. I was having trouble sleeping last night and having all these ridiculous thoughts that you have at 2 o'clock in the morning. And I was lying in my bed thinking, wow, am I really 45? Wow, I really should, I think I should really be a little bit more mature if I'm actually 45. Anyway.
Did your mom play this album when you were in the womb?
Oh, that would have been cool. No, yeah. I think there was probably what would have been playing when I was in the womb. I don't know.
Your mom was more into Kraftwerk?
I would have loved that.
She was probably into Deep Purple.
But we are going to it was probably ABBA being played on the radio. It's not quite as cool as who we're going to be listening to. So we're going to listen to a band called Noi. And I knew so little about them. I used to think that their name was pronounced New. It's the band from Germany that they first put out their albums in the early 70s, and you spell their band name N-E-U, but it's definitely pronounced Noi. And at first I was like, oh, right, okay, this is two of the guys from Kraftwerk, and they went off and formed this band. And that's kind of true, but it's not really true, because it was basically two guys who, for a short period, did play with Kraftwerk, but it's not like they were kind of the main guys from Kraftwerk. But they were kind of related, and I guess in this sort of, we're talking about krautrock. And there's no way I'm a krautrock expert, but I tried to educate myself, and I guess there's some krautrock music that I really like. I don't know. What are you guys, where do you guys sit with krautrock, as in, you know, this sort of particular kind of, you know, you could almost call it progressive music that came out first in the early 70s?
I did end up watching a whole documentary about Kraftwerk, and it's really long, and they go into kind of the late 60s, early 70s, kind of the the advent of electronic music. And to be honest, a lot of it is just completely unlistenable. Like, I mean, it's experimental in the same way that it's just like blips and bloops, and it's just they committed it to tape just to see if they could do it. And and so Kraftwerk was kind of the first one that actually took it and made it listenable, you know, something that actually had some melody and, just something that people could actually tolerate. So it kind of moved out of the art scene and into, you know, public consciousness, and then, you know, taken further later by Brian Eno and other people like that. But But I was, when I listened to this, I was shocked at how current it sounded. Like, this could be an LCD sound system album from, you know, 2 years ago or something. So I was really impressed by this. But go ahead, Will.
Well, I think that I'd have to say that if I hear something described as krautrock, I sort of perceive it as cool, but I can't claim that I'm a big fan of krautrock. You know what I mean? So I had heard of Noi. I think Barrett has talked about them before. He's a big Kraftwerk fan. And so it was fun, though. I really liked listening to this, and I had a couple moments where I had it on with headphones, and I said to myself, this is obviously influential because it sounds like something that could be, you know, decades later. So.
Yeah,
I agree with
I think
Chris.
You've touched on a couple of really important points that we might come back to, but maybe we should just have a bit of a listen. And I reckon we should just start with track one, if that's allowed. But I kind of think it's a good intro, especially to maybe people that haven't heard this band before or this style of music. This was their third album, and they've got tracks from their first two albums, which are probably more famous. But this opening track, which is, I think, just called ISI, is just a kind of a good intro to, I guess, kind of the part of their sound that I really love and that lots of people love. So let's have a listen to the opening track from Noi, the band from Germany. Their album was just called Noi 75.
Thank you.
I agree with playing track one. You know, it sort of in the context of the whole thing, you kind of have to include that.
Yeah, yeah. Sorry, Chris, are you about to say something?
No, go ahead.
Well, what do I want to say about this album? I think at the end of the day, for me, I just like it because I like it. It's a kind of music that you can either dance to or fall asleep to, and something about that that I kind of like.
So the thing I like about that song is specifically that it's electronic, but not in the way that Kraftwerk is, where everything is clearly electronic, where it's just, you know, obviously things are coming out of drum machines and everything's coming out of a computer. Whereas that has, I mean, it sounds like the drum might be being played by a human, and there's a, you know, the piano might be played by a human. There's a human element to it that I think makes it sound fresh today, you know, in a way it probably did in 1975 too. And that's why I think, you know, that's why I think it holds up, because it's electronic but with a human element. And I think that's what LCD Sound System does really well.
Yeah. And I think this whole idea of krautrock and people knowing about Kraftwerk, I think then people kind of make this assumption that it's all just sort of synthesizers and like early drum machines and stuff like that. And actually it's kind of not. Some of it is, but some of it, like you're sort of talking about in this band, you know, it was basically a duo. So Klaus Dinger or Dinger and Mikhail or Michelle or Michael Rotho, you can tell how much I know about them. But it was basically two guys. So one of them's a drummer who, and he played as a drummer in Kraftwerk for a short time. The other guy's the guitar player. But they both kind of did multiple things. But I think the drumming is a big part of this band and of this kind of style and kind of how it became an influence. I think one of the things about krautrock and bands like Neu is they became an influence on, electronic bands that then sort of picked up on their vibe 20 or 30 years later. And that's kind of what makes them really cool. But, you know, this drum beat that you were kind of hearing in that first track, they called that actual drum beat the Motorik drum beat. And apparently it was kind of influenced by the kind of feeling of driving down the Autobahn in Germany, this feeling of momentum and moving forward and sort of driving. That kind of momentum is a big part of a lot of noise music and a lot of kraut rock music, and that's kind of cool. And I think that's what kind of made it an influence on later electronic music.
And this is different in that there's like actual lyrics and like screaming and, you know, stuff later. I'm sitting there listening to it, and it's kind of dreamy and atmospheric. And then all of a sudden, you have a guy start screaming like it's a punk song,
right?
Yeah. I'm like, where did that come from? So
that's right. Yeah, so they call other parts of this album sort of German proto-punk, and I'm interested to hear what you think, Will, of that kind of idea of this sort of being early punk music that was coming from Germany.
Right. What I was thinking was just like Chris, you get this reaction of, wait, this is turning into like punk music, and it sounds like a predecessor to late 70s New York City style glam punk or something. That's, yeah, really interesting. Well, Chris, why don't you take the next pick?
I have another song to play, and just in showing how forward-thinking these guys are, the name of the song is E-Music, and it was a good 20 years before email, so I guess they figured everything was going to be electronic at some point. So let's play E-Music. We'll be right back.
That's Noi from Noi 75. E Music. So I guess they can't be sued by the music seller, E Music. But I was thinking if they had been so unlucky to have named this track iMusic, then they would have been sued by Apple, and Apple would demand they destroy all copies of the album, right?
Retroactively?
Yeah. Yeah. Everyone who has a copy has to surrender it.
This album, only 6 songs and yet 43 minutes long, so the songs stretch out a little bit.
Yep.
And develop.
Yeah. Yeah, and I love that. I think I love the aesthetic of, you know, these long instrumental tracks. You know, I want to use the word linear, but that makes me sound even more of a wanker. But, you know, they don't kind of really change. And I suppose I guess bands that we listen to these days, like The Wooden Ships and, you know, I love a band from the 90s called Trans Am. And there's lots of bands who you could sort of like point out, you know, who like kind of make new music that has a similar kind of vibe to some of this stuff that was made back then. But it's still, like you were talking about, Chris, it's still got a kind of a freshness to it, even though it was made 45 years ago. And, you know, it's kind of lo-fi in a way. You know, I listened to a recent interview with Michael Rother, the guitar player, who was just kind of talking about when they produced this stuff, and they had pretty limited limited budgets and limited technology in Germany in the mid-70s. And they had a producer called Connie Plank who produced the first 4 Kraftwerk albums, and a lot of these bands sort of seem to be interrelated like that. But they kind of did a lot with a little, I suppose, and their music is still appreciated, which is I think is pretty cool. If you kind of like this sound, it's definitely worth checking out the first couple of Kraftwerk albums, like from 1970 and 1972. I didn't really know much about Kraftwerk. I kind of knew their classic kind of sound, but their first albums are quite different than when they became really kind of electronic. So if you like the sound of this, more kind of like live instruments playing, you know, the early, you know, very early Kraftwerk albums are also worth checking out. I'm just laughing because I've become that guy. I've become that guy at the party who's like, oh, yeah, Kraftwerk. No, I'm really into their early stuff. But yep. I'm just kind of excited about it, and I guess I found it a fun project this week just to kind of like dive into what the hell krautrock really is. And I guess it's like, you know, it's like someone sort of saying, oh, yeah, I'm into rock music. Well, you know, it's a whole universe really, and lots of bands that sound completely different to each other. So it's not really just one thing.
All right, I'll make a pick. I'm gonna go back. Let's play one of the more slower atmospheric tracks. Number 2, Sealand.
Thank you.
So it starts out with percussion that just sounds like a metronome, right? Or a little click. And then the drums come in. It's cool. I like the way it builds. And there's all these little subtleties that are heard best on headphones.
Yeah, I kind of forgot I was on the podcast. I was so relaxed.
Yeah.
I was just going to listen to you guys the rest of the time.
You're sitting back on your brown corduroy beanbag.
Yep.
With a milkshake in your hand.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did we do it justice, Noise 75?
Hopefully. Yeah, I guess. Thank you. Thank you for. I feel like you guys indulge me, and I appreciate that. And I guess for listeners, we're just trying to sort of bring good music to your world, and I hope that we've done that. And yeah, as I said, I'm certainly not an expert on Noi or Krautrock. So I'm not pretending that I've loved Krautrock for the last 30 years. But definitely something that I like to sort of dip in and out of as a style of music. And I think the thing about noise music is that, yeah, it always just sort of jumps out at me. There's something about it that I really love. And there's something really, it's kind of really simple in a way, but has a lot of subtleties and lots of layers. And, we haven't really played anything that's really kind of punky from them, but they've definitely got some louder, more aggressive sounds, and I guess I would just encourage you to check it out. It's a pretty cool band, Neu, from Germany in the early 70s. N-E-U is how you spell it.
That was a worthy vault selection, and it didn't make the top 500 for Rolling Stone.
Yeah, it's because we're way cooler than those guys.
I think so, and Chris is going to prove it, right? Because Chris also went into the vault, dug something out that I don't believe that one's on the Rolling Stone list either, is it, Chris?
Criminally, it is not on the Rolling Stone list, and this could not be any more different than Noi.
Right,
we are careening from one extreme to the other with my pick, and it's an album that came out in 1982, so it was kind of at the late end of the 70s punk era. And I think it's just a underappreciated masterpiece in the canon of punk rock, especially given how early it was. You had a lot of punk rock in the late 70s that was aggressive and loud and fast. But I think these guys, so I'm talking about the Descendants from Manhattan Beach, California, and they formed in the late 70s. And a lot of the early stuff that they did was a lot of kind of like surf rock, kind of Beach Boys type of stuff. But then they got hooked on coffee. They say the style that they did was that they ended up doing was, 100% because they drank so much coffee and the music got faster and louder and more aggressive. But it's still funny. Whereas punk rock before had been kind of a New York City, like big city type of thing, they're really, I think, the first ones that kind of branched out and became suburban punk rock. A lot of the songs about suburbia, and I think they, they reached out, they had a whole new audience in that respect. But you never hear about this album, and the album is Milo Goes to College from 1982. You never really hear about it kind of in the canon of great punk albums, but I think the fact that it was so early in 1982, I think it deserves to be in there. And I didn't hear about it until I was in college, 10 years later, but went back and listened to the entire Descendants catalog, and they're just amazing. They're my favorite punk band. So let's get started. What song should I play? There's just so many good ones. Let's start with I'm Not a Punk.
We'll be right back.
It's a minute so four.
So much in contrast to Noi, this album is 15 songs, 23 minutes. So you can bang it out in no time. The lead singer, Milo Aukerman, the name Milo Goes to College, actually left the band after this album and went to college. He literally went to school. He became a molecular biologist. And the local angle here is that he actually studied for a while at UW-Madison. He was a molecular biologist here. So in a large sense, this is actually kind of nerd rock too, where you had actually like genius people making really stupid music for young people. And I don't know. I love it.
I had never listened to this band before, but when I first heard it, it reminded me of, did you ever see the TV series called Halt and Catch Fire?
I have not seen it, no.
It's really good. It's about computer geeks in the 80s. And one of the characters listens to punk music and she like plays cassettes or whatever. And it kind of sounds like this. I remember hearing it and thinking, you know, that sounds really cool. I have no idea what it is. So I wonder if that was part of that show. So there's a little trivia thing to find out.
There's an 80s movie called Pump Up the Volume with Christian Slater. And he plays a DJ, and he plays one of their songs called Der Wiener Schnitzel, where it's just like him at a Der Wiener Schnitzel ordering a bunch of food. And it's great. So I think they got a little bit of airplay from that.
Cool. Nicholas, thoughts on the Descendants?
A little bit like you, Will. I was like, oh, who is this band? I recognized their album covers and had heard of them. When I first put it on to listen to it, it reminded me of when I was in high school, I had a mate who was into Suicidal Tendencies. Were you guys ever into Suicidal Tendencies?
That's another band. Like, I know the name, and I don't really know if I know any of their music.
Well, they kind of a fun, I don't know where they were from, in the States. Kind of a, they have a little bit of a metal sound as well as a kind of hardcore. They were kind of like a skater punk band. Hardcore punk band. Anyway, maybe that doesn't mean much, but it was kind of fun. Am I going to be lynched if I? I don't even know why I'm asking you guys. We love quoting Dave Grohl on this podcast, don't we?
Sure.
He said that if the Descendants made Milo Goes to College in 1999, they'd be living in effing mansions. That's an effing amazing record. So. I think there's lots of love from 90s punk bands who became huge, who kind of drew on this band. And they're still going by the looks of it, Chris, with almost the same lineup. They've had the same lineup for years and years and years. You guys still there?
Chris just got dropped.
Mm. Ah.
See if we can get him back. Maybe he just doesn't like us. Maybe that's the problem.
Let's see. It was when I mentioned Dave Grohl. He was like, I'm out of here.
Yeah, so a friend of mine actually has a story. By the way, my computer died in the midst of this, so I'm on a phone now. So that's why I sound differently. But a friend of mine who lives here in Madison actually lived in his basement, Milo Aukerman's basement, and they were up late playing music loud, and Milo actually came down and yelled at them for being too loud, which is somewhat ironic. For a band that is this fast and this loud. So, yeah, any picks? I missed a little bit of what you guys said, so feel free.
So I listened to it maybe like three times through, and every time I listened, I thought, well, let's see, can I make a pick? And I thought, you know, if I made a pick, it would just feel like I'm making a sort of a random pick. So I think I should give Chris my pick. But my general thoughts were, it sounds like a little bit more complicated Ramones. Like, a lot of it has the same, like, some of those guitar those riffs are sort of Ramones like but the bass goes way more to a broader range, you know, than the Ramones ever did, and you know, his vocal style is way different too, of course.
Yeah,
pretty cool. So, well, why don't we see if Nicholas has a pick?
Sure, there was a cool one. There's a couple of ones that I really like. You just mentioned the bass, but there's lots of great bass playing all over this album. But let's go with track 8, Catalina. It's got a great line. It's got a great lyric that says, "Turn on my Beatles tape, it gets me out of my head." I thought that was a pretty cool lyric.
I'm a mess, I don't care. I'm kind of sitting at my desk. You can't bother me. Yeah, I'm far away from you. Got to get away. You can't ruin my day. You can't tell me what to do. You can't make me think I love you. Shoot it in your arm, you can't hurt me. I'm on my way to Catalina. I'm not gonna read your book. My table is squid, getting light. Whores, you can't make me want. I got all the fish I need on the deck of my boat. You can't take my heart when I'm here. Long term home for your cute little heart. I've got some gas. Fix my motor. Turn on my Beatles tape. It gets you out of my head. Deck of my boat. Now I want to, I really want to go. My motor's broken and there's no Scotch tape. I'm out of gas. Looks like I'm stuck here. It looks like I'm stuck here.
Descendants. Yep.
Yep. Yeah, I'm sad that I haven't had a chance in 10 years to mention this album, but here it is. That's why it was my first pick for the vault. And I should actually note as a trigger warning for much of the language on this album is not 2020 standards. There are several references to gays and other folks. I actually have a gay friend who is into punk music, and he's like, I kind of grant blanket immunity to everything before like the year 2000.
Which,
so,
yeah.
Yeah. So if that type of thing bothers you, this might be not be the album for you, but it's only a couple songs.
Well,
1982 standards, man.
Yeah. Well, I threw my pick back to you, Chris.
All right. Let's see. I mean, they're all great, but let's go. I think probably their most popular song on this album is number 9, which is Suburban Home.
I want to be stereotyped. I want to be classified. I want to be stereotyped.
Yeah, that's a great pick. Probably
that is probably the most Ramones-y song on the album.
Yeah, I was going to say.
You were just going
to say? Yeah, that would be, like, if I had really thought through it, that probably would have been the one I would have picked. It is fun, too, for me, because it totally reminds me of a band that a bunch of my friends had back in, like, 1979, 1980 era called The Resistors. I think I've mentioned them on the podcast a couple times. And this is totally their style, you know, just, you know, they played Ramones. They were played mostly covers, and they played Ramones, Sex Pistols, you know, this kind of stuff. And
yep, that song has it all, including the disdain for hippies, which the Ramones had as well. I don't want no hippie pad. I just want a house just like mom and dad.
Oh, man. Yeah. Well, that's a good one.
Check this album out. It's a classic. It's a 5-star pick. Should be in the top 500, but you know, what does Rolling Stone know?
Yeah. Some of you know.
I think calling a band fun is really it's really not a put down. It's not something that you can just sort of throw away. And I think that for me, kind of coming back to some of this like punk music that I didn't really pay attention to at all in the 80s, like you listen to it, and I just think, wow, it's just fun music. They sound like they're having a great time. You can just listen to the bass playing and have a good time, let alone the sense of humor that's in the lyrics and the kind of grimy guitar playing. I just feel like there's so much. I know that I keep on talking about joyful music, but I think this is another example of joyful music. It's not a downer when you listen to the Descendants. They're having a good time, and I think you can have a good time when you listen to them. I don't know. What do you think, Chris?
Yeah, absolutely. They obviously don't take themselves too seriously. This is they all have real jobs, and so this is kind of their side project. But I just read somewhere where Milo actually just is quitting microbiology for good to concentrate on his music career, and it's 38 years after this album came out, and they're still out there doing it. I mean, they are out there like on the Warped Tour and things like that in the last few years. So, gosh, he's got to be pushing at least mid-50s, if not more. So, they have fun, and that's why they're still doing it. So, the rest of their career, kind of on and off. Milo left for a little while, and so they changed their name to All, which is the name of one of their songs, in which they just sing the word All. That's the whole song. It's one second long. Later on the album, they have a song called No All. So my friends and I would argue which is a better song, All or No All. That took up a lot of boozy nights. But, they've got a couple great live albums as well. So, yeah, definitely check out Descendants, their entire 80s catalog.
And there's, speaking of the 80s catalog, there's some great footage of them live going all the way back to the early 80s, but definitely the kind of mid-80s, you can on the sort of grainy VHS-style film quality, but you can see them in all their glory when they were young, sweaty men. And it kind of brings it all into color. And for me, not really knowing much about them, you can kind of see what they're like on stage and definitely having a good time.
Yeah, not everything is an A+. Let me just say that. They have an album called Enjoy, which is about farting, like pretty much the whole album, about driving cross country, drinking lots of coffee and farting on each other. So that's probably not on the upper echelon of their albums, although there is a great cover of the Beach Boys' Wendy on that album, so I would check that out. But maybe stay away from that one.
Well, those were some fun vault selections, and I think we're one for one. Even though Nicholas might, he can't get more than one vote. So to the extent that he's not promoting the Beths, we've outvoted him anyway. So that makes us 3 for 3, and it also makes us above $0.
We did it.
Great.
And I'm going to sign off here pretty soon because I have to fire up the barbecue. I do not have any indie rockers coming over, though. So I'll have to do it in my own humble way here, Madison style.
Lame.
Yeah, it's a high standard to live up to. No hope of reaching that level. Yeah, I could have called the guys from Disc and said, come on over. Just sure. So that I had an indie rock barbecue going on.
Shirley Manson's not coming over.
Yeah, Shirley should be coming, yeah.
Some short rib.
Okay, thanks you guys. It was good. More fun coming
up
next week. We've got a couple new releases that I'm pretty excited to talk about next week. So
cool.
We'll get more podcasters, I hope. So whether it's you guys or whether it's somebody else, I don't know, but we will find out. So thanks again. Everybody be cool, and we'll talk to everybody again next week with another edition of Will's Band of the Week. Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
The Will's Band of the Week podcast is brought to you each week from Fourth Bedroom Studios in Madison, Wisconsin, with correspondents from the United States, Canada, England, and Australia. You can subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or anywhere else podcasts are found. All of our episodes can be found at willsband.net. To contact us, send email to willsband@yahoo.com or find us on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram. Our theme music was composed by Grant and performed by Grant and Will. Thanks for listening.